So if you think about the final scene in that classic action movie, the spy thriller, The Bourne Supremacy, Jason Bourne calls the CIA to turn himself in. But then he drops that legendary one-liner about, you know, being right in the adjacent building.
I want to come in.
Okay. How do you want to do it?
I need someone I know to bring me in.
Who?
There was a girl in Paris. It's part of the program.
She used to handle logistics.
Alexander Strasse.
30 minutes, under the world clock.
Send her alone, give her your phone.
What if I can't find her?
It's easy.
She's standing right next to you.
And then he just hangs us the phone mere seconds before this dramatic tracking software countdown hits zero. You know, beating the clock. It's peak action movie cinema from the early 2000s. But it's also complete fiction. Thank you for tuning in. This is Ibrahim Diallo, and welcome to Select by ID. You know, the general public often learns about technology from movies. So today I want to separate these Hollywood hacking myth that you probably grew up watching from the actual physical mechanics of digital privacy, which, you know, are less cinematic, but more interesting. One thing I want to lay up front is there's no such thing as a private connection. Keep that in mind. By the end of this podcast, you, the listener, are going to understand the physical reality of the digital trail you leave behind every single time you hit send on your phone. So that Jason Bourne reference is the perfect place to start. Well, because I just watched it recently, and it totally shapes how the public views digital surveillance. I mean, it creates this illusion that surviving the grid is just about quick reflexes. The movie essentially trains you to believe that if you just sever the connection fast enough, you know, that you beat the machine. I mean, I cringed the last time I watched the scene. I mean, we are supposed to believe that this massive intelligence agency has tracking software that takes a full, 60 seconds to pinpoint a phone call? And they call it triangulation. But computers, even back then, were incredibly fast at doing math. Why on earth would calculating a phone's distance from a few cell towers take a full minute? Well, the short answer is it wouldn't. The countdown clock that appears on the screen is just pure fiction. The reality of how communication networks operate is much more absolute than Hollywood portrays it. It's instantaneous. The math does not take 60 seconds. You are tracked the very instant your device tries to communicate. And to understand why, we kind of have to look at the physics of the network itself. When your phone connects to a cell tower, it's communicating via radio waves, which travel at the speed of light. We're talking fractions of a millisecond. To keep your call connected as you move around, your phone is just constantly shouting out to every tower in the area, basically saying, "Here I am, how strong is your signal?" And the towers hear that shout. So by measuring the exact microsecond it takes for your signal to reach the three different towers, the network can draw three overlapping circles, where those circles intersect, basically. That is you. It's just basic geometry handled by processors that are executing billions of calculations per second. It happens before the phone even rings on the other end. So the math is literally instantaneous. Jason Bourne hits send and boom, his location is mapped immediately. But obviously, criminals and spies in the real world do sometimes get away with making phone calls. If the system doesn't have a ticking clock while the computer does the math, what is actually causing the delay in real life? Well, the short answer is bureaucracy. The delay has absolutely nothing to do with processing power. The moment your phone hits the tower, it generates what's called call detail record, or a CDR. And this logs who you are calling so the networks can route the data. It logs how long the call lasts for billing purposes and the specific tower and sector you connected to. So the record is there instantly. But that CDR data isn't just streaming live onto the flat screen in front of some detective in a dark room. To get that information, investigators have to, you know, draft paperwork, contact the telecom provider, usually obtain a court order or a subpoena. And then they have to wait for the legal and corporate wheels to start turning. So if you want to put a realistic ticking clock in a movie, it shouldn't be for the triangulation software. It should probably be a calendar ticking off the days it takes for an intern at the telecom company to comply with that subpoena. Just watching the pages flip on a desk calendar. Anyway, in several movies, it's not a cell phone they use. Instead, they use a payphone, and there is no math or triangulation needed whatsoever here. The physical address of every single payphone is permanently hard-coded in a database. They just know where you are instantly. You know, it's like checking in into a highly secure hotel. The moment you walk through those sliding automatic doors, the security camera in the lobby have already logged your face and the exact time and specific door you used. Sprinting back 5 seconds later doesn't magically delete the footage. The tape is rolling. You were there. The system recorded you. But the police will still have to physically drive to the hotel, show a warrant to the manager, and wait for them to pull the tapes. But you may be wondering, what about burner phones? If I buy a cheap phone with cash, does that solve the problem? Well, yes and no. What's fascinating here is that the system has to record you just to function. Surveillance isn't some malicious feature bolted on the side of the network. It's just how the network works. It's the foundation of routing a call. So a burner phone will obscure your identity, sure, because your real name isn't tied to the cash purchase at that convenience store. But it does absolutely nothing to obscure your location or your web of connections. Going back to that hotel analogy, the camera still films you walking in, even if you are wearing a mask. The telecom provider still knows exactly what towers that specific burner phone bounced off of, what number it texted, and when it did it. So the phone call requires a physical infrastructure that inherently logs your location. But what happens when I switch from a cell network to, say, my home Wi-Fi? Because we've all been sold this idea of the internet as this untethered cloud. If I just sit on my couch and type a website onto my browser, am I generating the digital equivalent of that CDR record? And the answer to that is absolutely. That fundamental logic remains exactly the same. When you type a URL and hit enter, your device asks your ISP or internet service provider to connect you to that specific website. And that request immediately generates a log. So they see it in real time. It records that your specific IP address requested a connection to the IP address of that destination website. Your ISP has to physically hand over your IP to the destination server because the website needs to know where to send the data back. It's like if I request a physical package, I have to provide a return address or the web page literally cannot load on my screen. That's how routing works. But how precise is that address? Like, for example, on my own personal blog, I look at the IP address of my visitors. I'm not seeing the exact street address, but I usually only see enough data to make a rough guess, maybe your city or your general region. So you are safe from me at the very least. But the ISP holds the master map. They are the one who assigned you that IP address in the first place. They are actively providing the physical wires running from the street pole directly to your house. They know exactly who you are and where you are. But then, that means the ISP sees every single connection you make. Should you feel safe checking your bank account online? Well, that's why encryption plays a big part here. At this point, we've all been trained to trust that little padlock icon on our browser address bar, or the clear message that says not secure when you go to an unsecure website. Does HTTPS actually stop my internet provider from seeing what I'm doing? Well, HTTPS is incredibly important, but we really need to understand what it mechanically does. When you connect to a website over HTTPS, the content of your communication is encrypted in transit. This means your ISP or a hacker sitting on the same coffee shop Wi-Fi as you, they cannot read the actual data you are sending or receiving. So your bank password is safe, they can't see your password, they can't read emails you're typing. They can't see your bank balance. To them, the data passing through the wires just looks like purely scrambled mathematical noise. So, as far as your privacy is concerned, it's like sending a sealed letter through the postal service. The mail carrier, who is the ISP in this scenario, they can't read the letter folded up inside. They have no idea if it's a birthday card or a highly sensitive medical document. But they know exactly who sent it. They know who is receiving it, the exact time it was picked up, and how heavy the envelope is. The metadata is the envelope, and the envelope is fully visible. It contains an enormous amount of intelligence. Your ISP still sees the primary domain you visited. They know you went to a specific oncology website, for instance, even if they don't know which specific articles you read once you got there. The network needs that envelope to actually deliver the mail. And people severely underestimate how much of a story the envelope tells on its own. For example, if an ISP logs show that someone called a suicide prevention hotline at 2 in the morning, spoke for 45 minutes, and then immediately requested driving directions to the nearest major bridge. Nobody needs to read the content of the letter to know exactly what is happening there. The metadata tells the entire story. In some cases, the metadata is often more valuable than the content itself because it establishes patterns of behavior. And for a long time, the public didn't realize that. The public didn't really worry about metadata, or they just assumed that the little padlock was impenetrable shield for everything. We thought we were invisible. But if HTTPS securely seals the envelope while it's moving through the mail system, we have to look at what happens when it actually reaches the sorting facility. Which brings us neatly to 2013, Snowden leaks of the NSA PRISM program. It was a huge paradigm shift because the math behind HTTPS encryption is solid. We're always told it would take a supercomputer thousands of years to crack the encryption on a single secure connection. And that math still holds up. But how did intelligence agencies bypass that unbreakable math? Well, if we connect this to the big picture, it highlights a fundamental physical weakness in computing. I have one question. In a movie, how do you get the lock screen password from an uncooperating suspect? Think about it. Most of the time, you just grab a stick and hit them in the head. They will immediately comply. In that same vein, the agencies didn't bother trying to crack the unbreakable math of the encryption in transit. They just skipped it. They bypassed the problem entirely by understanding the physics of the data. Data cannot be computed while it is encrypted. So think about a massive company like Google or Yahoo at the time. Your email is encrypted while it travels from your computer to their data center. They sealed the envelope in transit. And in some cases, it remains encrypted while it just sits perfectly still in their hard drives. But when you type a keyword into the search bar to find an old email, or when the server needs to scan an incoming message for spam, the server has to read it. It cannot perform those operations on scrambled math. The server's processor has to temporarily decrypt the data in its active memory, or RAM, to actually read it, process it, and execute that search. So there is a split-second window inside the machine where the letter is pulled out of the envelope and laid flat on a desk. According to the leaked documents, the PRISM program capitalized on this exact mechanical necessity. The NSA was allegedly tapping directly into the physical fiber optic cables connecting the internal back-end servers of these massive data centers. They were scooping up the traffic behind the public-facing walls at the exact point where the companies were routing unencrypted data between their own internal systems for processing. So, they didn't break the lock on the briefcase while it was in transit. They just waited until you opened the briefcase on your own desk, and then they read the documents right over your shoulder. I mean, it's wild. And you know, knowing that the ISP tracks our metadata on the front end, and knowing that massive data centers have these physical vulnerabilities in the back end, the public naturally reacted. We all flocked to privacy tools, which is why we suddenly saw this massive explosion in advertising for VPNs and secure messaging apps. Everyone just wanted to buy an invisibility cloak. So let's test these tools against the physical mechanics we've laid out earlier. If my ISP is the problem, if they hold the master map of everywhere I go, I'll just use a VPN, a virtual private network. It creates an encrypted tunnel to a third-party server, so I connect to the VPN and the VPN connects to the website for me. My problem is solved, right? I'm invisible to my ISP. But let's look mechanically at where that data physically goes next. If your ISP is the postal service, using a VPN isn't becoming invisible. It's putting your sealed envelope inside a locked armored car. Your ISP sees the armored car leaving your house and driving to a specific secure garage, which is the VPN server. But they have no idea what letters are being sorted inside that garage or where they are going next. The armored car keeps my local mail carrier entirely in the dark. But wait, the armored car still has to deliver the mail eventually, right? We haven't eliminated the trail, we just relocated it. Now, instead of a highly regulated local ISP holding all our metadata, the company running the VPN holds all our metadata because they have to route the request to the actual website. They know your real IP address and they know exactly what website you're visiting. The connection is still recorded because the data physically has to route across the globe. You are simply shifting your trust from your ISP to whatever VPN company you found on a podcast ad. A VPN just moves the breadcrumbs elsewhere. But if the vulnerability of PRISM was that servers have to temporarily decrypt data to process it, what if the server never gets to see the plain text in the first place? I've been reading about end-to-end encryption, which is used by apps like Signal. It addresses the content vulnerability brilliantly. Well, with standard encryption, the server in the middle holds the key to decrypt the data so it can process it. With end-to-end encryption, the service provider in the middle never holds the key. They use public and private keys, and I'll try to keep it not too technical here. Think of public key like an open padlock and a private key as the only physical brass key that can unlock it. When you use Signal, you are essentially handing out hundreds of your open padlocks to anyone who wants one. If I want to send you a message, I write it, I put it in a box, and I snap it with your specific padlock onto it. Once I snap it shut, even I can't open it again. The encrypted box travels through the internet, bounces through Signal servers, and finally reaches your phone. Because your specific device holds the one and only private brass key, only you can open the box. So even when the data hits Signal servers, they have no way to process it in plain text. The lock stays shut the entire time. If law enforcement serves them with a strict court order, they literally cannot hand over the text messages. The only thing Signal could physically produce to a court is scrambled mathematical noise. End-to-end is a very effective structural protection for the content of your communications. But if you paid attention, you'll notice that the armored car problem still exists, doesn't it? Because even with a mathematical, unbreakable padlock on the box, Signal still has to route that box through the physical infrastructure that's still there. The physical infrastructure of the internet to reach my friend's phone. End-to-end encryption hides the content flawlessly, but it cannot hide the connection, because it still has to be routed. So if Signal gets a subpoena, they can't hand over your text, but they can say, yes, we have server logs showing that user A's device contacted user B's device at 2 p.m., and they exchange encrypted data for 50 minutes. The envelope still exists. The breadcrumbs are still there. You are protecting the message inside, but mechanically you cannot hide the fact that a conversation took place. The network has to know where to deliver the data, which means the network has to observe you. And that is the ultimate message I'm trying to impart to you right now. Whether you are prepping for a high-level tech meeting or you are just a naturally curious person trying to understand your own digital footprints, knowing the mechanical differences between content and metadata completely changes how you view your daily interactions online. We cannot make communication invisible. We can only make it unreadable. You are always leaving a trail by design. Because without that physical trail of wires and the overlapping cell towers, the internet simply wouldn't know how to connect us. And I want to leave you with the thought about the trail. We spend so much time and energy worrying about the content, right? Messages, hiding our photos behind passwords. But think about the metadata envelope. The who, the when, the where, the frequency of your connections. If an observer can see the exact timeline of every digital move you make, the doctors you call, the political headquarters your phone pings near, the locations you frequent late at night, does hiding the actual content of your message even matter as much as we think it does? If metadata alone paints a flawless picture of our lives, the true privacy in the future won't be about hiding what we say. It will require rethinking the physics of how networks allow us to connect in the first place. It makes you look back at that scene with Jason Bourne a little differently. The next time you see a spy in a movie hanging up the phone right before the clock hits zero, just remember, the system didn't need a minute to find him. It knew he was there the microsecond he hit that send button. His phone shouted to every cell tower in his vicinity. The infrastructure for mass surveillance needs no building. It's already here. Thank you for listening.